This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best football analysis from the likes of Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, Henry Winter and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
You're very welcome along to another episode of The Green Scene here on Off the Ball, your place for all things Irish football, brought to you by Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. I'm Ben Symes, back in studio for the first time from the off this year. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by a man who has been ever present, David Wilson. How are you doing?
All good. A 6 out of 10 fullback, I'm just always there.
Always there. That's probably been a bit harsh on yourself. A man who has been in studio every time, he has now taken the position of being quite literally out on the road. Matthew Brennan is on the line. Matthew, how are you?
All good, Ben. I'm not literally out on the road. I am well and truly parked up in a static position, just in case anyone was fearful of anything to do with that. But nice to swap roles with Ben after he was off sunning himself for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say insert the old Spider-Man meme when Ben was back. I was like, not Spider-Man, the Ian Wright meme. You know, when Ian Wright's like, oh.
I thought you were dead.
I wasn't dead. And I was sunning it up. I was in a city which is quite close to our hearts at the moment, lads. Very close to our hearts. Well, currently. We'll see how long that lasts for. I was in Seville. And I had this plan for about a month. Got asked to go by two mates, and when I got asked, it looked pretty likely that Troy Parrott was going to end up going to West Ham. There was small rumours that Real Betis could have been in the mix. He ends up going. I'm like, great, going to see Troy Parrott. Might get to see his debut. And Monday night, they're away in Valencia in the Mestalla. And then Saturday evening, they're away in Valencia again at Levante. So there was no chance to see Troy Parrott in person. I did, however, go to a Betis bar to watch this match. And I thought, I'll ask a few locals. I'll see what they think about their new number 19. How many people would you say had English in this bar?
Not very many from my limited knowledge of Andalusia.
Andalusia is not an English-speaking region. Yeah. And we have touched on this, but you forget how stark it is. There was one man in the whole bar who could speak very little English.
Yeah.
He was in his late 60s, and pretty much every fourth word had to be in Spanish, and then he'd be like, you know this. Knew very little about Troy Parrott, other than he's Irish.
What's the Betis bar beer of choice?
There's Cruz Campo, because obviously that's made in Sevilla. And then I didn't really want a Cruz Campo because I might have had a bit too many the night before. So I was like, I'll go for something a bit nicer on the palate. I asked for a sangria, and behind the bar, who did actually have some English, said, locals don't drink sangria here. They drink this drink called Vinto?
Oh, yeah. It's like a blackcurranty flavoured, sugary...
It's basically like sangria, except without the fruit. It's the same colour, similar kind of taste, a bit more towards red wine than sangria. It doesn't have the fruit, and it's fizzy.
I had
a few of them to keep me going.
It's like Kalimoto's in the Basque country. It's like red wine, Coca-Cola mixed together. Also, Messi's favourite drink. I know he's just announced his international retirement, but I think his favourite drink of... His favourite alcoholic drink, let's say, is white wine with Sprite.
Interesting.
Yeah, like a child.
Tame, very tame, has to be said.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you these were not tame, and I'm glad they were not tame, because you would have needed many of them to sit through Real Betis's 5-2 loss to Levante. Troy Parrott gets an assist.
Does he get an assist? Is it given to him
officially? We're giving it to him.
Okay.
And then, misses quite a good chance, let's just say that, in the second half, that so much so that the lads around the bar and Betis went... Oh, and puts her hand on their head.
Puta madre.
And, not quite that. Are we allowed to say that? I suppose we're not live on the radio. We can say that.
Yeah.
And the guy beside me, the older man, just turns and he just goes.
Yeah.
And I was like, I feel like I've personally let these guys down. But what did we make of Troy Parrott's first introduction from the off in a Betis jersey?
It was definitely more encouraging than if you compare this time last season to Evan Ferguson's first couple of games for Roma. He was definitely a bit more involved. There are two wingers either side of him, and you obviously need players to create in, was it Rodrigo Calabria and Anthony? And there's a couple of times where they had the ball and they're like, they're just a bit slow in putting him in, you know. I think he made a couple of good runs, especially in the first half, and I thought Anthony could have played him in, and I thought Riquelme could have played him in as well. Just a bit slow in the build-up. Isco is a phenomenal player, sometimes a little bit safe in his passing. So, yeah, like he definitely didn't look like he was out of place. Physically, he looked like a step above, you know, some of those defenders he was up against, which is quite interesting coming from the Netherlands. And obviously, we've talked about that quite often over the last few weeks or a few months as well, that he's filled out in particularly well. And yeah, look, he gets pretty unlucky with the offside goal, and then he obviously misses the really good chance as well. But like, you've got to be in those positions, and encouragingly from the start, he's been in those positions.
I think Riquelme in particular is very slow, and I'm interested to see when Eze Abde, the Moroccan winger, comes back into the side. I thought what was interesting is that the midfield, and in particular Isco a number of times, looked to play the ball into his feet quite early on, quite quickly. And I kind of, look, we're obviously not privy to what's going on inside the dressing room and the training ground, but it looks like he instantly has the respect of his teammates as a good technical footballer. Because I think Anthony, although we didn't see the best of it when he was in Manchester, I do think he is technically a very good footballer. Isco obviously is phenomenal. But I think he already has that respect. And maybe what he has that they don't have is that bit of physicality. And maybe going over Matthew and playing in the Netherlands and playing in the Dutch league and spending two seasons against some pretty big centre-halves might come into his advantage here.
Yeah, I think especially on his debut when he came off the bench and they managed to get that late winner, and he was instrumental in that goal too. It was very evident that he was well able to look after himself there, and it was something that we had picked up on, I suppose, throughout the last couple of international games we'd watched, that he was definitely filled out a wee bit, but still managed to keep that bit of agility that is ever so important for a striker, especially like him, who was getting on the end of stuff and getting in behind. I think as a people, we're very quick to be too glowing in our praise and then too damning in our sort of critique of a player, especially so early on. And I think, look, there's been some good signs, there's been some not so good signs. It's still very early on. There's no point in drawing any great conclusions from anything that we are seeing. He probably should have a goal by now based off of the chances that have come his way. You wouldn't want the drought to go on too long. I wonder, will he start against Real Madrid? My assessment, my kind of hunch would be probably not. I'm looking at someone like Isco there, as you mentioned, still definitely has a bit about him, but probably only has 45 minutes in the tank. I think they might be busy coming towards the end of this window. They'll be looking to get Dani Ceballos over the line. So I think over the next couple of weeks, we'll be able to probably get a better assessment of exactly where he's at, naturally enough. But I think you're probably right. I think the physicality is something that's definitely going to be a very important and evident attribute of his over his time in La Liga, however long it may be.
I am not 100% certain on the amount of games, but Isco only completed, it was either two or three 90 minutes in the whole last season. I thought that as well. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens on Friday night against Real Madrid. Does he start Cucho Hernandez, who obviously is more willing to run all night, or does he trust Troy to kind of be that hold-up player to take the ball out? It's going to be very interesting. And like you said as well, does Isco start? Is he fit enough to go against this Real Madrid team who look pretty incredible in their opening couple of games? A 4-0 win for them on the weekend.
Yeah, I think, you know, that Spanish word that's kind of come into English, you know, to suffer. I think Real Betis will be doing a lot of suffering on Friday night. But the interesting thing is about that, and Matthew just kind of mentioned, like, whether Cucho Hernandez might start. That might be a good thing, because on Tuesday night, Real Betis are playing away to Lille in the Champions League. So that's a great thing about this move, and that's what we talked about here as well before, you know, when the West Ham links are quite strong, is that he has lots of opportunities to play. The Betis squad isn't huge. It's going to be stretched at times. And whether if he doesn't, maybe only plays half an hour maybe on Friday night, he's got 4 days ahead of the Champions League game against Lille, which he should be involved in. I'd imagine if Cucho Hernandez is a really good game and Real Betis win, you know, obviously he'd probably start again in the Champions League. But he's going to get some minutes either against Real Madrid, one of the best teams in Europe, or against Lille in the Champions League, obviously the biggest tournament in club football. And it's just really interesting dynamic as well that we have, you know, Jose Mourinho, who is obviously the Real Madrid manager, going up against Troy Parrott, who he actually gave him his first team debut at Spurs. And that, and obviously they come up against each other in the, I think it was the Europa League, when AZ Alkmaar played against Fenerbahce, and Mourinho was the manager of Fenerbahce, and Parrott actually spoke in his Inner Drive episode with Owen that, you know, Mourinho was very complimentary of him, and he said he'd grown up as a from a boy to a man. So that's a really interesting kind of subplot, and I think that's what we have this season to look forward to. There'll be a lot of little interesting subplots that we mightn't realise, you know, weeks out ahead of the game, but like, you know, in the week leading up to the game, stuff like that. Like, so Parrott, you know, his home debut against Real Madrid, against Jose Mourinho, or in the Champions League on Tuesday. There's a couple of really exciting games to look forward to.
We're going to have to get a Spanish thing every time we talk about this, because I feel like there's going to be a weekly theme no matter what Troy Parrott does.
Yeah.
I saw that they are trying to get Dani Ceballos finally over the line today, which would be an interesting one. And your boy, Giovanni Lo Celso, is going to stay, so it seems, alongside Nathan Diosa. So I'm sure we're going to return to Betis quite a lot every week on this. But of course, we are into the month of September. We're into the month of the beloved competition that is the Nations League returning. So there are many, many other Irish players that we have to look out throughout the course of this episode. I'm going to start with Saturday, 3 p.m. Potentially the best time of the week for a lot of people. Why could that be? Probably because they're watching the Premier League. Are we watching the Premier League? No, we are not. We are watching the English Championship at 3 p.m. on Saturday, folks. What a rake of goals. Let me just run through these goals very, very quickly. And Matthew, I'm sure if I've missed any, you can you can keep me up on it. Cardiff 2, Sheffield United 2. We had a lot of early goals in this one. One for Tom Cannon for Sheffield United. Then Callum O'Hare, of course, once thought to be Irish eligible, then actually not Irish eligible, scored. And then Jack Moylan scored for Cardiff. So really good to see him get rewarded for that really impressive form in the opening couple of weeks for Cardiff. There was a lot of goals in Southampton 5, Millwall 1. Mark Sykes got that goal for Millwall. But for Southampton, there was a goal and an assist for Finn Azaz. There was an assist for Ryan Manning as well. Bristol City beat Portsmouth 2-1. Jason Knight on the score sheet. Blackburn 1, QPR 2, a Jimmy Dunn winger. Are we missing anyone else there, Matthew?
Yeah, there was someone I was thinking of there, and it's gone just out of my head. You might come back to me, and I will have that for you.
There, of course, was people playing in the Premier League as well. John Egan was a centre half for Hull City, a second clean sheet in a row.
I saw someone clipped up all of his clearances against the Coventry City.
That was the Hull City account.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, kind of funny noise in the background of him just heading everything, clearing everything. And, you know, Egan, we talked about him last week and his amazing performance against Manchester United. Hull have obviously had a really great start to the Premier League, you know, and kept two clean sheets, and Egan's been at the fulcrum of both of those games. So, yeah, it's great for him. Jack Moylan, interestingly as well, I just saw that Brian Barry Murphy was kind of speaking about him after the game on the Cardiff City Twitter channel. He was saying that Moylan, a really effective game, and he needs to be patient because, you know, he's very attack-minded, wants to do things that are unpredictable. And that unpredictability, I think, is something that Ireland and Hamer Grimson is really going to need over the next few weeks and months of the Nations League. We've kind of not had a player, I don't think we've had a player in that role, let's say number 8 to number 10, that continuously wants to play forward as much as Moylan does. Azaz is obviously, you know, I think our most talented creative player. But I think there's just a directness to Moylan sometimes, and he doesn't seem to really care is the wrong word, but like, he doesn't seem to be affected by maybe giving the ball away. He likes to take risks, and he takes risks in the attacking third of the field as well, which kind of most importantly is going to create goals. So I've been really enthused by his performances so far this season, and I think John Egan has been the story of the Irish. Of the couple of opening weekends of the Irish football kind of interest, and that's been great as well. And obviously we've had the Brentford angle, which on Sunday they obviously drew at Leeds, but obviously Collins and Callagher made a couple of good saves as well. So it's been a mad old start, but I think quite encouraging to where we were before the start of the season.
Before we touch on some of those other players, you mentioned a name there, Jack Moylan. I was actually out at the Aviva Stadium this morning speaking to Will Clark, who's the head of the League of Ireland Academies, and Moylan's name was mentioned. You can find that piece with Will Clark. Will be in your off-the-ball feeds later this evening. But Will Clark was talking to Jack Moylan and referenced him being a late developer, a late physical developer. He was really, really small as a kid and would have been kind of touted as one of these people who really talented but not fully physically developed yet. And it's interesting to see that the FAI have brought in the future developers rule, which is basically for kids who might be, 14, 15, 16, and they're a lot less physically developed than other kids in that age group. Like, as we know, it stems from January to December. So, you could have a kid who is basically a year biologically developed and then could also just naturally be a quicker developer. So it's interesting to see players who will be 14, 15, 16 might be playing down an age group, or players playing up an age group, players to kind of fit their role a little bit more. Because I think the FAI are aware that we probably have lost players in the last 15 to 20 years that are exceptionally talented but didn't develop quickly enough physically. And Jack is a brilliant example of one of those players who has all the talent in the world, just took a little bit longer than everyone else to reach that physical development. You mentioned Brentford there. Keith Andrews, Damien Duff, Stephen Rice, Nathan Collins, Cueven Keller. Nathan Collins gave a little bit of a scare, lads. Allen Road, were you watching? Don't know if you're watching this one.
No, I was just on the radio.
With about 90 seconds to go, Brentford started chasing back in the game again, and Leeds pumped the ball along. It looks like it's gone straight to the hands of Cueven Keller, and Harry Wilson makes a darting run around the left, and Collins just like barges into the back of him, just throws him onto the floor. Referee gives a free kick right in the edge of the box, and you're going like, oh, they are the moments that we've had our worries about with Nathan Collins, where you just kind of have that little bit of a lapse, like usually so focused for all the 90 minutes, and then he just has that maybe tendency to lose the concentration for 1 second, and you were like, what are you doing? And the free kick gets ordered, and obviously Anton Stach steps up, who, as we know, is a great free kick taker. And luckily, the free kick is not all that good. But I did just wonder, our own Stephen Doyle was there, and I asked him after the game about Collins, and asked him about, the assurance of playing in a back four. It was very interesting to hear the tone of Keith Andrews' answer, when he kind of basically just like swaddled it away, and was just like, I have no concerns at all about Nathan. And I never really have.
Yeah.
It was really refreshing to hear that.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And it's easy for us to kind of look at that and go, yeah, grand, that's fine, that's all our worries with the bed. There are obviously still concerns about him in a back four as far as the Republic of Ireland national team goes, but that is not of Keith Andrews' worries. If he's comfortable that he can play in the system that he's playing with at Brentford, and he's been pretty good this season. I do think he probably just misjudged where Harry Wilson was in relation to him, and it was one of them where he wanted to just sort of give him a little bit of a shoulder to shoulder, like a little bit of a nudge. But again, that's where the concentration comes in, and he does always seem to have one of those in him. It's just unfortunately coming off a lot more in a green shirt than in a red shirt from our perspective. But they've had an unbelievable start to the season, and if Nathan Collins is playing and playing well, that can only be a good thing, because there was a point towards the second half of last season where he wasn't actually in the 11, and there was obviously talk about an injury that he had and no one to throw him back in, and then obviously the guys who had come in to replace him had been playing pretty well, so that sort of explained it. But it still, as I mentioned before, that's no good to us as far as the Republic of Ireland is concerned. But he's definitely had a decent start to the season, and he's bagged a couple of goals. I'll let you come back at Brentford in a second there, obviously, Ben, when you were running through the results. It wasn't a goal that you missed out on, it was actually an assist. So that was on my behalf there. Millie Alley got an assist for Charlton, who are after starting unbelievably in the Championship this year. They're top of the league, the only team in the league that have recorded 3 victories, and he's played a decent part in that for them, as has Conor Coventry, who had a very good first half of last season, wasn't able to continue it through for the entire 12 months, but hopefully he can this year.
Conor Coventry gave away a penalty in the last minute against West Ham in the London Stadium, and I thought, oh god, I'm sick for him. You're going back to your old club, you're about to get a 2-1 win over the line, and he gave away the penalty. And when Cash Allen missed the post, I was delighted for Conor Coventry. I can only imagine what was going through his head in those final few moments. It is obviously transfer deadline day as we're speaking at the moment, so it's quite hard to know what's going to happen over the next couple of hours. There is one interesting report that has come out within the last about 20 minutes or so of this recording. It's from Dan McDonald, the Irish Independent, talking about Johnny Kenny and 4 clubs in the Championship being interested in him. So as of now at 2:25 p.m. they are a potential move back to Bolton, Preston North End, West Bromwich Albion, or Blackburn Rovers. Bolton looked like they were kind of the main destination for Johnny Kenny all summer. It looks like now he could be going elsewhere, but it looks pretty obvious that he is going to be leaving Celtic on a permanent move to the Championship. What are we expecting for him there?
Well, I can expect.
I'll let you run away with this, but he needs to get out of there anyway with the strikers that they've brought in. I think the Bolton one makes sense. That's why I was encouraging of it in the first instance, that he could go there on loan, get them promoted, then come back into a setup that he knows with a bit of comfort. Obviously, he got injured towards the latter half of the latter end of the season, that he missed out on the playoffs, but obviously, they did manage to go and get over the line. The Bolton one makes sense. The other clubs you listed off there, West Brom, I think, could be up there towards the top of the Championship. From that perspective, it could be a decent move, but a lot of competition for places. Blackburn are expected to struggle, but have started the season pretty okay. Preston, I'd be really worried about as far as the business that they've done this summer. So I think Bolton, as far as stability goes, is probably the way to go. But once he gets out of Celtic, I think we can all be pretty happy with that one.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with just getting out of that club and going somewhere where you're valued and loved. And obviously, the Celtic fan base is quite a toxic place at the best of times, and they've been very critical of Johnny Kenny over this last 2 years or so, especially when he's kind of got into the team. Interestingly, I think if he went to Blackburn, I know we probably shouldn't speculate too much, but just Tony Mowbray is a really good manager, and I think he could play a really important role in his development. So we would like to see that if he doesn't go to Bolton. And the Preston one is interesting, Matthew, because Alan Brown has gone there, come back to Preston, after being obviously away from them for quite a while. And he's one of Preston's he's one of the players that have made the most appearances in Preston history, so to go back there is an interesting move as well for him. And I think that's a really good thing for Ireland as well, that he's going to be somewhere playing. Obviously Sunderland are quite busy now today, bringing in lots of different players, and obviously they're getting ready for a European campaign as well. So Brown back at Preston, I think, is a good thing for him, good thing for Preston, and a really good thing, I think, for Hammerhall Grimson as well.
Yeah, as long as Alan Brown is fit, he's going to play pretty much every minute of every game there for Preston, which is what he did when he was there initially. Obviously, made the move away to Sunderland. They got promoted, was on loan at Middlesbrough last year, was a pretty important cog for them in a very, very good side. I think he would have learned a lot about the game of football while being there under Kim Hellberg. He obviously didn't manage to get promoted, and I actually thought he might hang around at Sunderland just because they hadn't been doing that much business. And obviously, after contend with European football, not that I was thinking he would be a kind of focal point of that outfit, but just might have been a decent body to have in the building. But in a different way to why I would, if I was advising Johnny Kenny, I would avoid Preston. I actually think it's a pretty decent move for someone like Alan Brown, who, despite the fact that he did get good minutes for Middlesbrough last year, he wasn't playing every minute of every game, and he'll certainly be doing that for Preston. And at this stage of his career, I think he still could have a role to play for the Hammerhall Grimson going forward, despite the fact that he didn't set the world alight, to say the least, in the last window.
Just, do we think it's interesting that both Robbie Brady and Seamus Coleman don't have clubs at the moment? Obviously, you can sign as a free agent for another while yet. So do you expect that something will happen over the kind of next few weeks?
I would think that something would happen for the international break, because I know that the FAI setup would love to have Coleman in the squad.
If he doesn't have a club, does he get picked?
I think he would still get picked. I just think it makes your job a lot easier to pick him if he does have a club. You don't have to answer the questions about it. Brady's an interesting one.
Yeah, if Coleman, for example, doesn't play and then is picked and then obviously gets a club, like let's say within, you know, the squad announcement and then the squad being meeting up together, is that not like a really worrying thing?
as in
like picking, we have any other right backs or right wing backs to pick.
Oh yeah, but should we, like, I think we kind of know the situation at the moment with our right backs. We don't really have any, and this is a big worry, and this is something that has been flagged by them as well, and it's why they're so desperate for him to stay on, not just for the experience that he has and the leadership that he has, but also he probably is still in our like top three right backs. Alongside,
he's definitely in our top three right backs for sure. I think we do probably have a few options there, but maybe not that many that are as comfortable there as they are in other positions. Like James Abank has had a couple of minutes there for the Republic of Ireland. He's obviously playing an awful lot for Udinese at the minute. And then you're sort of looking at Mark Sykes, who I don't really know how well Hammerhall Grimson rates him. I think he hasn't been in too many squads. I think he's gotten injured around some of them and then was obviously looking for a club. So in the last window, so pulled out that squad, and that could well be used against him. I mean, Hammer did say that that was something he was going to factor in when picking squads going forward, lads that made themselves available and didn't. Now, whether that means it'll just be brownie points for the lads that did make themselves available, or whether it means it's going to be an X beside the names of the lads who didn't make themselves available, that remains to be seen. I think I'd agree. I think Seamus Coleman is going to be in the squad regardless of whether he has a club or not. I think Robbie Brady one's weird because, weird in the sense from a Republic of Ireland context, that I think the club he ends up at could be quite far down the leagues. Not that that's where his level is at, but just with the stage of his career that he's at and the clubs that are in and around where he's based and the links to Salford and all that sort of stuff, that might have been something that would have happened already if they were keen on doing it. If he ends up at a club like that, he might not be in the squad. But if he doesn't have a club at all, there probably is a world where he's in the squad, which is sort of unique. I think for the two of them, I've had a feeling for the last couple of weeks when there wasn't a deal done early, that it would be a case of clubs having a priority list of who they want to sign in both of those positions. And if they don't manage to get what they want come the end of the transfer window, they'll turn their attention to the likes of Robbie Brady and Seamus Coleman. And that's not just an Irish thing. I think that goes across the boards for some of the older players who are currently free agents.
Can I just say something about Matt Doherty? Will he get back into the squad? I just seen he's played 73 minutes out of 5 or 6 games in all competitions this year for Sheffield United.
Can't see it.
Why do you think
it would be difficult to see, but I wouldn't completely rule it out.
Yeah,
at all.
He kind of doesn't have the greatest reputation amongst Ireland supporters. Why do you think that?
Look, I think it's potentially, unfortunately for Matt Doherty, he has this kind of running style which is quite similar to I know Jake Mullaney has as well, to pick a League of Ireland example, where, like, you know, your shoulders are kind of slumped and you look like you're running, you're kind of jogging along when you're moving. I think that gives off the impression a lot of times that he can be lazy. I don't think it helps when you have situations like the Hungary home game where, you know, you're in a position where you are the last person to move out and you've kept someone offside when people already have a predisposition that you're a lazy player. I don't think stuff like that helps it. I think because he looks like that when he runs all the time, when a mistake happens, which is bound to happen when you're playing the defence in international football, it looks a lot worse. I just think that the general Irish fan maybe has a perception about him that not necessarily is true. Like, but I would kind of wonder, his days in Ireland shirt just kind of done anyway. Looking at the nature of playing club football, I know Seamus Coleman obviously is playing even less minutes than that, but we know the reasons for picking Coleman. We know what he gives you off the pitch. Matt Doherty is not the vocal leader off the pitch that Seamus Coleman is. Matthew, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have too much to go and caveat what you've just said there. I think in general as well, he just has been involved in a lot of the bad games. And I know a lot of these players have, so I don't know if that really holds much weight. But I think back to Greece at home as well, with obviously Christos Solis, who's gone on to a pretty decent day a couple of years after that. But there's just been a couple of those different instances, and you do get an awful lot of it when you're in the stands and you're watching the games as a fan. He does misplace a pass or that sort of stuff. He does get jumped on maybe more than other players. And as you say, I'm not sure that's entirely fair. But I'm just not 100% sold on what he can actually add at this stage as well. I know we're talking about how limited we are at right back. And it's just funny as well. Like, in recent times, he hasn't really played as a wing back for the Republic of Ireland either. When he's been in the squad, he's, I know that Hungary game at home, he was sort of playing in the left side of defence, which was a bit bizarre. And again, you have to put your players in the right positions to try and get the best out of them. But if he's not viewed as someone who can contribute in the position he's most comfortable, there's no point in bringing him in to sandwich him in somewhere else in the squad. Maybe when himself and Seamus Coleman were both playing at maybe not the highest level they had in their career, but there was a period there where they were both very, very good, a lot better than the two of them are now. And it was worth maybe trying to squeeze the both of them in. I think we're gone well beyond that at the moment. So, 73 minutes at the start of the season since he signed with Sheffield United. It's not quite a lot. So it'll probably have to be a big upturn in appearances and a big upturn in form too if he is to get back into the squad. But as you say, and as we said there, we are quite limited. So there is a world in which he gets back in. I just would be surprised to see it myself.
A man who you mentioned there that might play right wing back, James Bankwa, has played all 90 minutes in the centre of a back three in the first three games for Udinese this season. So very interested to see what happens there. A man who has played right wing back before, not necessarily recently started there for Ireland, Chidozie Akbene, looks like he is going to be getting a deadline day loan move to Lincoln City, where obviously Mason Melia is, ex-League of Ireland. Can I call him star? Goal scorer, Freddie Draper also is as well. What do you make of this move?
It's just a good move for Akbene because he just needs to play football. He's still... He looked at, you know, from an Irish perspective, he is so vital and so important to this team. Like, he is crucial to how we play football. And he's been crucial to how we play football for several years now, where he plays up front in a front two, and he's like the battering ram slash hold up player, whether he is out on the right doing a job on an attacking left back, or whether he's just there as like a leader. And I think we've all kind of commented that over the last couple of windows where he's kind of become, you know, obviously he's closer to 30 now than he was before, but he seems to mature, and especially after the bad injury he got as well, he seems to be kind of a new outlook on life as well. And he just needs to play football. And from an Irish perspective, if he's not even playing every week, if he's just playing maybe one game a week, that's probably a really good thing. But he's just so important to Ireland. And no matter where he goes, where he plays, whatever level I think it's going to be, he's going to be in an Ireland squad.
Yeah, I'd be with you on that 100%. And he is going to be so crucial, even as far as Euro 2028 goes. Beyond that, we probably do need to look elsewhere, but we don't need to worry about that for the time being. He was linked heavily with a move to Stoke during the week, and I wasn't too keen on that, to be totally honest, because that was going to open up the door for a move for a player they have called Sorba Thomas, who's a Welsh international, who has been far and away Stoke's best player, and they've been absolutely tragic since January. I think they've won three games, and he's been the only player who's really been up to much. Now, obviously, we know Boston Lowell is there, but he's had his injury issues, and the response to Ogbene's links to Stoke from the Stoke fans was pretty much as bad as I've seen, as far as why are we bringing this guy in. I had a look. One of the Stoke journalists had put out some stats around it, that Sorba Thomas had attempted X amount of crosses and created X amount of chances. And when Ogbene was flying for Luton in the Premier League that time, it was a completely different sort of approach to being a winger. They're very different players, and it was going to be a like-for-like replacement. The Lincoln move, I think, is far better. He's going to be far more well-received signing there. They'll hold him in a far higher regard than maybe the Stoke fans would have done, and he doesn't have to live up to the reputation of what Sorba Thomas would have been doing. As far as Lincoln go, they had a very good win the weekend against Bolton. Slightly surprising. They were good on the opening day against Middlesbrough, and not so good second time out. I'm unsure about how successful Mason Melia's time with Lincoln is going to be as far as tangible outcomes. Game time at that level is going to be great exposure for him. But I do think it's a move that may suit Ogbene better than it will Mason Melia, and ideally suit the both of them pretty well too. Josh Honan's obviously getting a couple of minutes for them as well over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Josh Honan back playing for the first time since that bad injury. I do think it will take a while for Mason Melia to break out the team. I think that was kind of thought of when he went there originally. There are a few more things that, well, there's one more big thing we want to touch on just quickly before we get to that. I should mention there were debuts at the weekend for Irish players out on loan at certain clubs. One time now, Irish international Rory Finneran had his debut for Notts County
and got rave reviews.
And look, Rory Finneran is a really, really impressive footballer. Really technical, tidy, does everything well. I was lucky enough on Matthew as well to be at that game in Mercia for his debut. And I spoke to him after, and like, he's really level headed, like, knows exactly what he wants from football. So that's very exciting to see what kind of season he's going to have there. The other one is Jacob Devaney, who's gone on loan to Hibernians. Am I harsh in saying that maybe he could be at a level above that?
A level above Hibs?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he really impressed on loan in Scotland.
That's what I mean.
Like, last year. I think Hibernian are a level above St Mirren. I think St Mirren might be getting another relegation playoff maybe this year in the Scottish Premier League. I don't know. Like, I think Hibs, is another good stage of your development again. And we spoke about this, I think, last week as well, Matthew, because we were talking about how, you know, the basket case culture of Celtic and Rangers, which is kind of dominating the footballs, the Scottish football discourse up there at the moment. But for when you look at Elding at Hibernian, and you look at Joe Hodge at Motherwell, and now you look at Devaney here at Hibs now as well, I think it's a really good area, a really good place to you for you to develop your career. So I think he's definitely in the right moment. And, you know, we've seen players make big step ups that they haven't been fit to make over the years. And it's been, you know, it's been like Troy Parrott, for example, has made, you know, went on numerous loan moves that didn't work out for him at all. So this is like a steady kind of process for him, for Devaney. And I think this is a really good move for him. He's going to be playing, you know, week in, week out, I think, I'd imagine, at this club, at a huge club in Edinburgh. They've got, obviously, the derby on Thursday against Hearts. Obviously, Oisín McEntee has been absolutely sensational for Hearts in a probably what's been a poor start to the season for them. Obviously, though, they have got to Europe in the Conference League. And they play against Trabzonspor and Mo Salah, and they've played a couple of games. They have a game against Monaco as well, which is really interesting. But I think for those type of players, this is a really good place to be in to develop your game. Now, I mean, I have lots of question marks over Scottish football in general, especially the two big clubs. But other than that, I'd actually be quite positive about it.
I think he'll be grand. I think he'll do well at Hibs. From my perspective, though, I would look at it and go, you went to Scotland, you played a half a season with a pretty poor team and looked way above the level. I wouldn't have minded him going and joining a West Brom, a Bristol City on loan for the season, to be totally honest. I do think that that is a considerably higher level of football. You're going to be playing an awful lot more. So from my perspective, I would have rather see him go do that. But there are a lot of pros to the Hibs move as well. Again, as you mentioned with Johnny Kenny going to Bolton, there's a little bit more stability there. He knows the league. It is his first full season, I suppose, in professional football as well. Obviously, only had the second half of last season with St Mirren. So he looked right at home the weekend. I believe he got man of the match. And to be fair, he could draw an awful lot of comparisons between himself and Rory Finneran with how they got on. Obviously, Rory Finneran is playing at a considerably lower level than where Jacob Devaney was at the weekend. But encouraging signs for both. But I think Jacob Devaney is going to be very good for Hibs, but we're probably not going to learn an awful lot. We're probably just going to get reaffirmed what we already thought last season. And then next season is probably when we see him kick on. They do have an option to buy.
Yeah.
Not sure what the terms of that option are and how likely it is for them to take up that option, and maybe what has to happen for them to take it up.
Yeah, I'll try. We'll try to figure out the details of that. It certainly is interesting that they have an option to buy him after re-signing a new contract with Manchester United before going on the loan move as well.
Look, you were listening obviously to Philippe Auclair last night in the football show. Like, none of these transfer moves, especially in the UK, make any sense whatsoever.
There is one transfer that doesn't look like it's going to happen, and that is Jacob Ryan out of Everton. West Ham United had a bid rejected for, or an inquiry rejected for, Michael Keane today. So it looks like he is going to stay behind Tarkowski, Branthwaite and Keane in David Moyes' pecking order. We will talk maybe a little bit more about that next week. There is just one other thing we want to talk about before we wrap today. And this is a situation that we spoke about on Off the Ball last night with Kevin Kilbane. And this is Ciarán O'Neill, the man from Kilray in County Derry, obviously the town of Martin O'Neill, who played for Northern Ireland and currently manages Celtic. He's two caps for Northern Ireland. He came through the JD Schools Academy in the north, and the FAI are pushing very, very, very hard to get this guy to declare for the Republic of Ireland. Like, they have pretty much put all their eggs in the Ciarán O'Neill basket. Have we even seen enough Ciarán O'Neill to know, is he worth it? But by all scouting reports and from the little bits I have seen about him, it does seem like it would be worth to get this guy to play for Ireland. Is there a little bit of a grey line or grey area, though, with this kind of recruitment of such a young guy who obviously comes from a place where identities are very much mixed together?
No, because he's playing and grown up in a system where his best pathway to professional football was probably through a certain system, and obviously this elite kind of academy structure that they have in Northern Ireland. And obviously he's obviously with Linfield, but it's different because there are, you know, thousands and thousands of people in the north of Ireland that are Ireland fans, that they're Irish, they feel Irish, they don't even question whether supporting the north. It's kind of, you know, I think the grey area, I don't know if there is really a grey area. I think you're either kind of one or the other. It would be made much easier if we just had an all-Ireland football team, but look, that's a discussion for another occasion.
I don't mean grey area in terms of what your identity is. I mean grey area in terms of when you grow up in that, you're in, you know, within that border, let's say, you are in that jurisdiction and you will play for a national team. And look, I saw someone say that maybe the FAI aren't doing enough for people who are up there and want to play for Ireland.
Yeah.
This could be one of those situations. I'm just saying, when you go to that academy and you're like, the benefit of that for Northern Ireland, of that JD Academy, is that these boys are together from 12 years of age.
Yeah.
And they're with each other the whole way up. Like,
life is tough. Like, you know, people get poached from nations all the time. Like, look at the World Cup there. France had like something like 50 players outside, born in France, that were representing other nations. You know, we talked about it on this segment quite a lot about, you know, feelings of nationality and where you're from can be quite nuanced. I don't have any problem for the FAI to go after players in the north. It's something that should have done long before. It's something they should do from, you know, probably younger age groups. I do feel bad for you know, Northern Ireland, that they've obviously helped produce this player and he has played two senior caps. But the rules are the rules. He can still move. You know, his uncles are Paddy and Owen Bradley, like two of the best ever footballers to come from Derry. Obviously, Owen had quite a distinguished career in the NFL Premiership as well. I think he played for Coleraine. And, you know, two of them with huge GA backgrounds. Obviously, Conor Bradley is a huge GA background. He's went on to play for the North. The FAI missed out on him. They made a mistake by not getting Conor Bradley. That's going to annoy a lot of Northern Ireland fans. That's just the way it is. But I think there's absolutely no problem to go after players from probably, you know, from Derry, from other parts of the North as well, to get them to put on an Ireland FAI green shirt.
Are you just saying this is the food chain?
Maybe so, but look, I have to say, I was reading something there a few weeks ago. England are doing a huge study, basically, on players of that are eligible to play for England. Okay, Brian Maggio is one of them, who's going to probably make his Aston Villa Premier League debut over the next few weeks. One of them as well, he's obviously played for Luxembourg at senior level, but now he's actually playing for England under 17s. One other one is like Jeremy Sarmiento, who's Ecuadorian, who actually plays for Ecuador. But years ago, England were so keen to have him. They were making sure that he's been picked in all the 17s, 18s, 19s, 21 squads. Okay, he hasn't made it to the elite level of England. They've got loads of other players too. But England are doing that. Germany are doing that. France are doing that. I think you have to, if you're serious about your football and have to have a big pool of players to pick from, I think you've got to go after all the best players and all the players that are eligible for you. Ireland have missed out, obviously, with Declan Rice and Jack Grealish and Jude Bellingham and Harry Kane and all those stuff, you know, all that stuff in between. But I think you just have to go for it. James McCarthy, Aidan McGeady is two other examples I can think of off the top of my head. Obviously born in Scotland, grew up in Scotland, but huge connection to Ireland, and obviously went and played for Ireland as well. So I've absolutely no problem going after Ciara Quinneil.
Yeah, I do need to run now in the next minute or two, but the only thing I suppose I'd have to add to it is the Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland thing is a little bit different, I suppose, than the Luxembourg, England thing and all that sort of stuff.
100%.
The only grey area I think there is when you go for these lads, in quotation marks, I put that. I think they should always have the option to do what they want to do. But if you're a 14, 15, 16-year-old person who is playing for Northern Ireland's academy setup, I don't know if you should do anything more than make sure they're aware of the fact that they can go and play for the Republic of Ireland if they wish to do so, or and train with the Republic of Ireland if they wish to do so. I'm not sure about the idea of, and I know it happens, and I know it happens all around the world, and that is the nature of football, and it is a cold, hard, murky sort of world, but I'm not sure about the idea of going and trying to convince or persuade people of that age to make a decision that would be so significant to them going forward. I think the Ciara Quinneil thing is slightly different. He's played twice for Northern Ireland, and the FAI have probably gone, oh, we want this kid, let's get on to him. And he's what, 17, 18, 19 now, is he? 18. 17, 18? 18.
Yeah.
I think that's okay. I think you're well capable of going to make a decision then. But we often talk about the leaving cert and how crazy it is to make kids go and decide what they want to do for the rest of their lives at 18. this is a similar sort of thing to that. So that's probably the only hesitation I would have there. But like, listen, if Kilkenny wants to go play for the Republic of Ireland, let him. We're more than happy to have him. We don't know how good he is, but like, you'd rather have the opportunity to go and find out.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how that pans out over the next couple of weeks. Obviously, told BBC Sport and I that he is just focusing on his club football. There will be international camps decided in about 2 weeks' time for both the Republic of Ireland and Northern Irish football teams. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see if Ciarán O'Neill is in either of them squads. Matthew Brennan, I know that you have to run and go talk to a few boxers about somewhere. I think there's an event on this weekend, is there?
Yeah, probably the biggest sporting cultural event of the year.
Bigger than Ireland versus Kosovo?
Slightly. It's actually going to be held in a soccer venue, Croke Park.
I'd say it's more likely been soccer played there more recently than GA, I think.
You know yourself. Caesar's Palace, Croke Park.
And even Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi on the weekend.
Yeah, and now Katie Taylor. So Matthew Brennan, we'll let you run off and enjoy that. Thank you very much for being on the line with us today. You have been listening to The Green Scene, proudly sponsored by Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. David Wilson, any final thoughts before we leave the episode off for today?
No, not really. I suppose, interestingly, Lionel Messi announced his international retirement last night.
For those who are listening on podcast, David is wearing a lovely blue Argentina football jersey.
Yeah, it's just mad. Jumper. One of the very few times I got to see him play live in the flesh is obviously in the Aviva Stadium. That was the opening game for, I guess, the Irish national team perspective. Argentina came and played here and won 1-0. Our own Kevin Kilbane was playing in that game. Killian Sheridan started up front as well. Bailey's own Killian Sheridan. And Di Maria scored. Messi, I think, played 60 something minutes. He just literally got off the plane for Barcelona.
58 minutes.
Yeah, 58 minutes and played. And just felt like I wish we'd seen more of him here in Ireland. But it feels like the closing of a very long and distinguished chapter. It just feels like anything kind of connected to my childhood is now over.
It
like,
is mad,
you know,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I was speaking about it at a news talk yesterday. And it was only when I walked out, I was like, I haven't known, my first football memory is 2006 World Cup. I haven't known football without Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
On an international stage. And I do think international football is the pinnacle. It is the peak. That's why we do podcasts like this. There is nothing like it.
Mm.
Can I give you the teams that day before we wrap up?
Yeah, this is exactly what we all wanted.
Because I was kind of thinking, you're going to be listening going, oh my God, I need to go look that up.
Yeah.
Which team do you want first?
Should go with the Irish team first.
In goals? Let's see, how much of Argentina versus Republic of Ireland in 2010, I think?
Or 2009?
2010. Does David Wilson remember?
In goals for Ireland?
In goals for Ireland. I wish we had a sting for this.
Shea Given.
Back four, and it is a four.
We'll go Kilbane.
Yeah.
Richard Dunn.
Yeah.
Sean Saledger.
No.
John O'Shea.
One more.
Right back then.
Affiliated with Manchester United recently. Hull City.
Manchester United and Hull City.
Manchester United. A bit later. Was he bookended by Manchester United? Definitely ended. Was he bookended?
His playing career. Paul McShane. Ah, yeah.
Do you know who came on for Kilbane? One of his four caps for the Republic of Ireland.
Oof. Now you're testing me here. Four caps. Go on, tell me.
The new Salt Hill Devon manager.
Oh, Greg Cunningham. I think he actually mentioned it on the Football Saturday in here.
Yeah,
a few months ago.
Came on. He came on in the 57th minute. Messi went off in the 58th. So Messi obviously didn't fancy going up against Greg Cunningham on that right wing. Midfield. Go on. There is. Yeah, I say there's a four.
Keith Andrews. Ed McGeady.
No.
Damien Duff.
Damien Duff is there. It's two more. I would categorise both these as kind of central midfielders. One more attacking than the other.
Stephen Reid.
No, a man who famously did not have a club at a European Championship.
Simon Cox. No, he had a club. He was a striker as well. Glenn Whelan.
Paul Green.
In
the number six shirt.
Yeah, Trapattoni loved him.
He did. The other midfielder.
Darren Gibson.
No, man who famously scored a goal in Poland for St. Patrick's Athletic. Keith Fahey.
Keith Fahey, yeah.
Do you know who came off the bench for him?
No, someone.
Keith Tracy.
Keith, oh, no way.
Greg Cunningham and Keith Tracy.
Yeah.
Darren Gibson came off the bench for Keith Andrews. Okay. And then the front two, you mentioned one.
Killian Sheridan, yeah.
And up top with
Robbie
him.
Keane.
Robbie Keane. Do you know who came off the bench for Killian Sheridan that day?
Is it like Caleb Folan or someone?
It's just the second name, so I just want to double check that it is this player. And it is.
Liam Best? No.
Andy Keough.
Andy Keough. I think he scored in Trapp's first game against Serbia.
Incredible.
Rifled one.
The subs who never got to play, Kieran Westwood, Foley, Stephen Kelly, Darren O'Dea, Anthony Stokes, and Darryl Murphy. Very quickly, I'll run you through the Argentinian team, right?
Yeah, go on.
Romero in goal. The defence was Gabriel Heinze.
Walter Samuel played?
Walter Samuel, centre half. You know who came on from? Colaccini.
Yeah.
Di Micheles and Berdiso. Zabaleta came on in there as well, as did Insua. He's the old Liverpool left back in Insua, isn't he, the Argentinian?
Yeah, there was two of them.
Yeah, there was Emiliano Insua. Yeah. And then.
There was an.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, midfield was. Oh, man, it's just ridiculous. Like, Ever Banega.
Yeah.
Mascherano. Gago. On the front three,
Di Maria.
Angel Di Maria. Obviously, the man on the right was
Messi.
And through the middle.
Ooh.
Let me check. Is this
Crespo?
Nope.
Oh, Aguero, Saviola.
Gonzalo.
Gonzalo Higuain.
Higuain. Yeah. Off the bench was Milito.
Diego.
Diego Milito. Lavezzi.
Pocho.
And Gutierrez.
Doing at Newcastle.
Is that Jonas Gutierrez? I think I was going to check.
Yeah, I think it could be. He only had a very
limited career at international level. I know that.
I think the manager of Argentina.
22 caps.
Yeah, the Argentina manager back then was Alejandro Sabella, I think. Or was it Pizzi, maybe? But it was just after or was it just before the Maradona era? I think it was just before.
It was before.
Before Maradona managed them in the 2010 World Cup, so it must have been.
No, then it was just after. So then it was literally right at the end of it.
Yeah, so must have been just after.
Marco Tardelli was in the dugout.
For Ireland
that day, yeah. Who was the new coach? Who do you think their coach was?
Was it Pizzi or Sabella?
Sergio Batista, new coach at the time. That was the thing, could have been his first game.
Right.
Bench wasn't bad. The lads who didn't get on for Argentina. Like, it was grand, like.
Yeah.
Tevez, Aguero, Pastore.
Yeah, Pastore, which went for like 50 million, but back then, which was huge money.
Which was like the equivalent of 150 million now.
Yeah.
But yeah, good times.
Great memories.
Let's roll on some more games in the Aviva Stadium this month.
Yeah.
Singular game.
Yeah,
Ireland versus Austria at the end of this month. That is all we have time for this week on the Green Scene, folks. David Wilson, thanks for joining. I've been Ben Symes, and we will be back again next week. Take care, folks.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best football analysis from the likes of Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, Henry Winter and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Off the Ball Rugby Roadshow is coming to your province. Join some of the biggest stars from Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht as we travel round the country to preview the 2026-27 rugby season. Don't miss your chance to be there. Get your tickets now at offtheball.com/events.